And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The race is on, and Williams is the latest team to reveal its 2021 car with the unveiling of the Williams FW43B. And it's the first car to launch under new owner Doralton Capital that is hoped to mark the start of its revival. I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to take a close look at the car are Gary Anderson and Mark Hughes. Well, Gary, how would you rate the Williams launch? The augmented reality app, which was quite cool actually, had to be abandoned thanks to it being hacked, but it was a nice, straightforward bunch of images and a press conference. It's dead simple.
Yeah, it just shows you technology. It's obviously not right there yet at the moment, so hacking is possible. They did release pictures of the car. We can see the majority of it, and I'm reasonably impressed what I've seen. There's a lot of sort of details on it that I think are pretty reasonably up to date, and a couple of other ones that they've gone a slightly different route in themselves. But looking at it, I see on the internet there's a few complaints about colour schemes and stuff over the new cars. Some people like things, some people don't, but you'll always get that. But we're trying to look inside the colour scheme, and that's the thing that's not very easy to do. You know, there's a lot of paintwork lines and highlight lines that affect what you see, especially when it comes to pictures and nice glossy pictures. So looking past all that, I think that they've stepped up the game, I believe. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them making a reasonable step forward this year.
Yeah, certainly. It's good to see them in good shape. I mean, one of the things, Mark, that was striking was how much better shape they're in at the start of this season, and massively so compared to 2 years earlier. It just seems a much more together team now, doesn't it, in terms of having the financial stability and all the other problems, or at least those huge problems sorted. Now it's just the long, hard grind to try and climb the order.
Yeah, the structural problems on the operational side and the manufacturing side, they were more or less sorted last year. They made, because it had a fairly disastrous start to 2019, when they didn't have a car ready for the first day of testing. So, yeah, that was all refined a lot last year. And the build quality of the car was noticeably better when you saw them close up. It was just a much more, it was the same architecture of car, but it was a much more refined version, and it did find a big chunk of lap time. I'm sure Gary's got the exact percentages to hand, but it from memory, it found well over a second per lap on its predecessor, and cut the gap to the front by a lot, with a car that looked, to the casual glance, very similar. So that car wasn't ever intended to do a third season, but of course the regulations have demanded that it does. So they've done as much as they can within those constraints, I guess. And there's a very positive vibe about the team as it enters into this new era, which is promising to be a very useful rebuilding era. And just in the press conference we just had, had Jos Capito there saying, there's no reason whatsoever that it can't emulate the rebuild of McLaren in the way that that has been done in the last 2 years. So, yeah, a lot of investment going in there, and a lot of good people. So, yeah, within the constraints of the regulations this year, it's probably expecting a lot for that to be really visible in competitive terms. But yeah, it has the feel of a place that's doing all the right things. It's getting its house in order.
Yeah, it's all about clearing the big problems first, wasn't it, last year? Just the real, real big fundamentals. And then things like they've got weight off the car. They actually said they've got ballast on the car this year, which they didn't have last year. And they were overweight, I think, all of the previous years. So it's been pretty hard work. And I think it was sort of the middle of last season when they actually got down to the weight in certain configurations. I think there were varieties depending on what suspension options it chose. But Gary, as always, you've been studying the images and you've got your performance spreadsheets there to quantify the progress. So what strikes you about the car?
Well, the big thing is obviously they made progress last year, and that's critically important to the momentum of any team. In 2019, they were 4.3% off. Their average performance was 4.3% off their Mercedes, which was fastest at most events. And last year it was 2.8%. So they improved by 1.5%, and that gives you confidence. That gives you momentum that, you know, what you're doing is going in the right direction. It's still a long, long way away from Mercedes, but that's not their challenge for the next few years. Their challenge is to reduce that 2.8% again by the same step, if possible. If you did that, you'd be doing pretty good. You'd be heading up the top end of that midfield bunch. That'll be very, very difficult for them to do. But, you know, they've got the momentum. They've got confidence in what they did last year to move forward. They're just going to try and take that a step further into 2021, which, you know, on one hand with the same car, it's difficult to do. But on the other hand, with the same car, it's actually easier to do because you're not taking so many risks. You're only focusing on the areas that you know can bring you, you're pretty confident can bring you some improvements. You're not just piling into a whole new car and designing everything again. You're not trying to reinvent the wheel. So one hand, the steps might be more difficult to take, but on the other hand, there should be steps in the right direction. And the car, as I say, that, you know, one of the things that if you look from the start from the front, really, as we always try and do, because the front's the first thing it sees airflow, and the rest of the car only sees the airflow that those parts sort of shed off it. So you always start at the front and you end up at the back somehow. And it's the ones that can do that best, the cars that can manipulate the airflow down through the whole package of the car as best possible, that end up with the package that's producing the most downforce, or the most efficient downforce, or the most consistent downforce. And as I say, their front wing last year and the year before was fairly primitive. You know, it had none of the trick stuff in it. It was just basically a very, very simple, very short cord leading edge flap. In other words, the main plane was a very, very short cord. And that's one way of getting rid of or reducing sensitivity, you know, so that it actually works for you quite well. But when you reduce sensitivity by losing downforce, that's never a good way to go. The car is better to drive, but you're losing too much peak downforce. So, you know, that's one of the areas where they've always gone that route, but they never really got into the trick sort of vortex generation parts in the front wing. And this, you know, for 2021 they've their front wing looks modern as far as how they load it across the span. It's, you know, a bit more Mercedes, it's a little bit more loaded outboard than what they used to run. So they've moved around how the load's been going to be produced by that front wing. They've still retained their very short cord leading edge main plane, and that's more of a sort of airflow a customizer, I suppose you might call it, sort of makes the airflow appear onto the front wing surfaces pretty consistently. The problem is really that the first slot gap is very near the throat of the wing, which is where the front wing produces the downforce. And when you've got the slot gap there, obviously it pulls more airflow through that slot gap, but it does reduce the total downforce. So it's an area that I think they have a consistent front wing. I'm not sure they'll just definitely get the peak downforce out of it that they need, but it's a step further forward than what last year's one was. So I think, you know, everything on the car going right through it is basically been challenged and re-optimized, I suppose. You know, through the barge board, again, the same deal. It's all small detail changes, but in reality, with the stability of the regulations we've had for such a long time, and these changes to the floor and the diffuser area, that sort of area still has to do the same job. So you're not going to see anything revolutionary. You're just going to see small detail changes that make the airflow work a bit better. Behind that, there's a few more changes, but we'll come to that in a minute or two.
Well, it's encouraging to see that aerodynamic detail improving and them going in the right direction, because it's fair to say, isn't it, Mark, that this team's weakness for a long period has been the aerodynamic side. hasn't it? That's been a weakness. Aerodynamics ultimately is the overwhelming performance differentiator in Formula One. And this is the area where they have to improve and continue to improve if this team's ever to get back to the level of being able to get podiums and win races, let alone even think about fighting for championships.
Yeah, and it's had quite a few personnel changes heading up the aerodynamic department over the past few years. And as one new regime has come in, it sort of put a line through what was there before. And so really we're starting again back in 2019. And since then, I've just been sort of building on that. So, yeah, it is as now as the team's being resourced more fully, and the building blocks are going in place. Hopefully, they can retain some stability whilst adding, you know, new expertise and new simulation tools and all those things that are going to help put performance on Williams cars in general going forward. But yeah, I think it looks a more ambitious car than last year, as Gary was talking about with the front wing. And it looks as though they have, at least within the constraints that they've been allowed, they have, you know, attacked what they can in the various surfaces that are visible from what we can tell, because it's a rendering that we've seen in the. Well, the real car's going around in Silverstone unpainted form. So we haven't actually seen that yet in detail. But yeah, it does. It looks more aerodynamically ambitious, but it's still within the constraints of what's a pretty old car. And it's got the unfashionable wide nose, which is, as Gary's talked about in the past, doesn't lend itself as well to the cape turning the flow around. It's not such a fashionable thing, but it's not... you know, I don't think that's going to be in the part of the grid where it's expected to be fighting. I don't think that's going to be a defining part of its performance. It's just, you can see that it's visually quite an old car. It's just, it's had some nice updates put on it.
Yeah, and of course, the important thing is where it's coming from. It's been in the Constructors' Championship last position the last 3 years, which is pretty terrible for a team of that standing. So very much the first step. But Gary, looking a little bit further back on the car, what catches your eye?
Well, yeah, that's the bit that's more interesting for me. That's the bit where they've sort of gone off the beaten track a little bit. We all saw the Mercedes and the Aston Martin with its bulge on the side cover to miss something underneath the bonnet as such. Whereas on this car, you don't see that. Now, they've... You know, the cooling of these cars, there's an inlet area, there's a big radiator in the side pod, and there's an exit area. And basically, you know, just as nice rough figures, the inlet area needs to be somewhere about 20% of the radiator area, and the exit area needs to be somewhere about 35% of the radiator area. And that gives you a pressure drop across the radiator to pull the air through from the front to the back. The smaller you can make that inlet, and the smaller you can make the exit, and the smaller you can make the radiator, means there's less airflow going through there. So you have more airflow to actually generate downforce, because the airflow that the car is displacing won't do both. It's either going to cool the car or make some downforce. So what they've gone for now is, you know, a very simple radiator and a package around that radiator. And then they've wrapped the engine up as well. And they've sort of joined the two of them together, as opposed to what you might call connecting the two up with nice flow lines. So they're basically getting the minimum sort of body area they can. But interestingly, I think their exit area, which comes out of the radiators and goes down the sides of the engine, what you've got to do is try and make that as uniform as possible. You can't accelerate the airflow too fast coming through the radiators, it'll just stall. So you have to sort of have a good expansion duct, I suppose you might call it, for the radiator exit. Now, these engines inside that body is sort of covered in another body as such. There's a gap between that inner body and the outer body. And that's the duct that you want to expand as consistently as possible, just to get good airflow on it. So what they've done is they've taken some of that airflow through higher than the other cars, which is in effect giving them a narrower coke bottle at the bottom. So the bodywork tucks in more underneath where you'd imagine the exhaust pipes and stuff to be. It means it's a little bit more bulbous at the top, but it's only air volume down inside there that you're trying to sort of manage, and you're trying to manage it in the best way possible. So the objective for them was to make the coke bottle area as big as possible, which is a very important part, because, you know, it's the area that's above that section of the floor that was cut off, that triangle in the floor that was cut off. So what you want to do is reduce the blockage there as much as possible, get as much airflow as possible through between the inside of the rear tire and the bodywork, and that means there's lesser airflow for the underfloor to suck on with a low pressure area underneath the car. So you should get more downforce out of it. So they've definitely taken the bull by the horns as far as, if you look at the very front view of the car, the sort of up high front view of the car, you can see the sort of radiator section and then the bodywork section going past the engine. So they've done something quite different from what Mercedes or Aston Martin, who are using the same engine, have done, in the fact that they've tried to move the airflow across the sort of cam covers above the exhaust pipes of the engine rather than down low along the sort of side of the pumps and stuff down the bottom of the engine. And they've got more of a letterbox radiator exit, I think you might call it, at the back of the car, as opposed to a bulbous exit. There's more of a horizontal letterbox. Just a bit more, but it's just small detail. And I think with what they've got, they might just have improved the volume of that coke bottle area to get more airflow through there. So all in all, I think that's an area that they've attacked differently from other cars. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, who's got it right again.
And it's encouraging to see they've actually, as you've put it, Gary, attacked the car, because we saw Haas reveal their livery on the old car. So we didn't talk about that because it is very much a 2020 car. But Williams could have said, oh, we're not going to bother doing too much on this. But they've done a lot. And Mark, as they said, they've got an aero upgrade for race one that they're going to try in testing as well. So they've got a couple of aero packages to try out, and there is a plan for an in-season upgrade. So while obviously the priority is 2022 overall, because that's the key moment with the new rule changes, they've done enough to at least make some gains this year and hopefully at the very least still be in that Class C battle at the back, even if they don't make a bigger step.
Yeah, and I think probably the biggest challenge they're going to have, if we assume they're still going to be in that battle with the same two teams, will be just how much more horsepower Ferrari have given those other two teams. Because obviously they were well down on power last year to Mercedes, and then Williams had the advantage of that. So yeah, I'm sure Williams will have made gains as well this Mercedes will have made gains as well this year with the power unit. But you would assume that the Ferrari's got more headroom, for improvement. So that's probably going to be their challenge, and they're going to have to hope that the gains that they've made aerodynamically and on the weight and things like that can overcome that. So yeah, I would say that's the big challenge, and see where they are from there.
Yeah, I think Mark, what you're saying is right, but what they've got to look at really is the fact that last year they were 2.8% away from Mercedes, and if Williams can shut that gap down to Mercedes, that's their big challenge. You know, the Haas and the Alfa Romeo may come and go with Ferrari horsepower or whatever, but Williams have got to focus on themselves and making sure that gap to whoever's fastest is reducing. And as I say, it probably will be Mercedes, but if it's not Mercedes that are fastest, they've just got to look at Mercedes because they've got the same power unit in that car. So that 2.8% is the important thing for me. That's what you got to shut down. And that's what gives you confidence. I wrote a thing a while back about, you know, you can't just let 2021 slip by. Because everybody works with confidence, you know. It's like you writing a good story. You write a good story, people say, oh, I like that. And you get confidence, so you get in there again. But for an engineer, design engineer, aerodynamicist, whatever, it's the same deal. You know, all those steps that you can make and going in the right direction means you've got confidence in the direction you're taking. And going into 2022, that's going to be critically important, because you have to make some major decisions for then as to how you're going about stuff. You know, the aero sensitivity of componentry, aero stall, using the aero stall to make the car better, making the car more consistently balanced. But you've got to have confidence from the fact that you've done bits and pieces of this. It's worked for you. Your head's thinking in the right direction. And that's really what 2021 for all the teams, but especially Williams, is all about. You know, because they'd lost themselves for quite a few years. You know, and that really just means you don't do anything, because you just don't know which way to turn. All you're doing is spending money, not going any quicker. Now they've got to spend a little bit of money, get that confidence, and then they'll go into 2022 with a confident approach to the development requirements of the new regulations.
And Mark, what do we make of the new ownership and the way they're conducting themselves? We know they've put in money. They put in over $100 million, both to clear most of the debts and also for cash injections, for facilities upgrades, etc. Do you think they're making the right moves?
we can only judge from the outside. The amount of money that's been invested is very serious. It gives a very clear message of intent. The appointments they've made with Jos Capito and the appointments that have been made further down technically all suggest that they are being very serious about restructuring this team, getting rid of the legacy problems that it has had for years and years, in making it more modern, if you like, in terms of the structure. So yeah, I mean, every pointer, every indicator from the outside looks to be right, and everything they're saying makes sense.
Gary, Jos Capito is now the man in charge as CEO. Is he someone you've crossed swords with much in the past? What do you know about him?
Yeah, I have. I crossed swords with most people at some point in time in my life. Jos was in charge of the Ford Rally program whenever I was technical director at Jaguar. And unfortunately, Jaguar, we weren't doing very well, and the Ford Rally program was doing quite well. So Jos was a Ford hero at that point in time. But in reality, I think he is a good guy for this situation, because he comes in with a reasonable amount of credibility in the management style, and an understanding that it doesn't happen by luck or just wanting to do it. You have to actually do it. It's a bit like Andreas Seidel going to McLaren. You know, he comes in with an approach from a completely different formula, but competition is competition, and that's what it's all about. And you also bring that, I think, to the new group at Williams, because they've come into a team, but they haven't come in from any real competition, to be honest. And actually, interesting, addition to Williams as well is Jenson Button. He knows very, very little about the whole design of a car, but he does know what a driver expects out of it, and it's not just the driver moaning that drives the car. There can be somebody else there that can actually give you a little bit of input from a detached point of view. So I think the drivers at Williams can relate a little bit to Jenson, because he's still a current driver. He hasn't given up that long ago. And he's a driver that will be able to listen to their drivers and actually maybe just put that language a little bit differently to the engineers. So it's not as though he can go and do very much, but he can be a nice balance between a whinge and racing driver and a technical team that doesn't quite know what they're going to try and achieve. But I think technically they're going in the right direction with the appointments they've made with Jos Capito and other staff. Obviously, it's not just one person, but they're going in the right direction for the future. And I think they've shown more in this car than I personally expected from Williams to do on this car. So I'm pleased to see them do that, because, again, as I keep saying, the confidence in that is such a big thing.
But looking at Capito, Mark, he was at McLaren briefly, and as far as I understand it, a lot of the things that he identified in his brief spell there were things that were subsequently fixed. So the comparison with McLaren is a fairly obvious one. Do you think that comparison holds water? Yes, once great Formula One team struggling, Williams is the same thing. Do you think that there's enough similarity there to say that Williams can do the same thing as McLaren, or do you think it's only the same thing in the kind of lowest of resolutions, and it's just get better and move towards the front?
Well, no, two teams they're exactly the same, and they have quite different cultures, but in many ways they've had parallel paths. Through the 80s and 90s there were the two top teams, weren't they? And you got Mansell OJ was stolen from Frank by Ron, and you had Adrian Newey, the same thing, and but you had the sort of baseline with Patrick Head as the technical baseline at Williams, and Ron sort of split with John Barnard, so he didn't have that, and so they sort of diverging off in different paths, and Williams was always renowned more as a cottage industry structured team, whereas McLaren was much more modern in its structuring. And so when they've hit their various snags, the causes of the snags and then the effects were quite different. But yeah, there are things in common. There are things in how they where they sunk to, really, competitively, and from where they'd been, and the process of clearing house and rebuilding is quite similar. It's a sort of, we're about 3 years further on down the road at McLaren, probably in that process. But yeah, so their story is actually quite similar.
Yeah, of course, the question is whether they continue to go in the same direction. But yeah, certainly an interesting challenge for Williams that does actually look credible in that regard. I guess the other thing they've got, Gary, which you always like, they've got a good young driver in George Russell. Of course, a good young driver who's got a couple of years of experience and who almost won a Grand Prix last year on his one appearance with Mercedes. So that must be the kind of thing that really gives that team hope of some big results, because yes, he hasn't scored a point other than in his one-off in a Mercedes, but we know how good George Russell is with all those Q2 appearances last year. So that must inspire a team when they know they're in for a long, hard year towards the back. But to have someone that you know can pull out some magic must be important.
Yeah, it is very important. I mean, you can't doubt George's talent. It's just a little bit of a pity for him that he's got boxed in a little bit with the Mercedes contract, whatever you like to call it, because he's not got any way out of there right now. So as long as he doesn't see frustration appearing too much, you know, his forehead, that this is maybe it, then I think you see him developing from race to race. You know, I think Williams know that if they give him the tools, he'll do the job. He'll bring them back something, but he's just not going to let frustration step in there. That something might be nipping for 10th or 11th place rather than first or second. And it'd be very easy for that to happen. You know, we don't know what's happening with Lewis next year really yet. And we don't know what's happening with George Russell, whether he's going to be taking that seat up or not. But maybe they know a little bit more from it in the background. And that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds through the season. But all George Russell can do is get his head down, make sure that he beats his teammate consistently, bring home the best result possible on a Sunday, because that's all that that team can go for, is the best result possible. If for any reason he's running in the top 10, keep it in the top 10, you know. Don't let excitement, over-excitement or what get to you. And I think his one run in the Mercedes last year showed him and sort of concreted and gave him that confidence that, give me the opportunity and I can do it. So his mistake that he made at Imola last year in the Williams was, again, another step in the right direction for him getting his confidence and knowing that he's, you know, he can't throw things away, because when he does get to a top team like Mercedes, you know, if he does get to there, he can't throw things away. So this is his learning curve of making sure you bring home the best result possible. In one car it might be first or second, let's say. In another car it might be 10th or 11th. But no matter what it is, you've got to take it to the checkered flag.
And of course, Russell himself, Mark, was quite coy about his aims for the year. He was asked about whether this year was about proving he's good enough for Mercedes, and obviously he doesn't want to sit there at the launch of a team's car and say, yeah, it's all about getting to another team next year. But he is an interesting position, because presumably he doesn't know exactly what's going on next year. He'll also be evaluating the progress Williams is making and thinking whether that's the best place to be next year, because if he's not in a Mercedes next year, he could be in a Williams or he could be elsewhere. So I guess he's quite a good barometer of where the team's level of progress is, isn't he?
Yeah, and all he can do is just wait to see how that situation develops. If it really is uncertain, or as perhaps he already knows what the game plan is. But if it is uncertain, all he can do is his best and keep the focus. And I don't think he will lose that focus. He's going to be, if anything, even more confident. I haven't often that run at in the Mercedes last year where he was so impressive. I can't see that he's got a future outside of Mercedes. I don't think he needs to have a future outside of the Mercedes family at the moment. I think Toto Wolff has been very consistent in saying he's got a very, very bright future. He just needs to keep faith. He doesn't need to worry. And I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure there is a plan for him within the Mercedes family. And this is the final year of his Williams contract. So, I think it'll be a bonus if the Williams is better than expected and can transcend that part of the grid that it's been at last year. But, yeah, this is, in many ways, it's viewed from the outside, it's just a holding season for him. But obviously he can't look at it like that. He's still got to deliver performance the maximum he can all the time. But I think when we look back on it, we'll see in the career of George Russell, I think we'll see this was just the holding season.
So final verdict, Gary. Obviously, you haven't got a great deal of information to go on, given we've just seen a handful of renders of the car. But where do you expect Williams to be running this season? Do you think it'll be similar to last year with a handful of Q2 appearances? Do you think it'll be worse? Could it be even better?
I think it'll be a little bit better. I just got a feeling in my water that it's they've sort of addressed a lot of details on the car and left, I suppose they'll say, no stone unturned. Yes, they haven't got the narrow nose. Everybody else has, and that's a little bit of time, but it's a huge expense to get through the crash tests and stuff. So there's a time and a place for everything. You know your steps you're taking, and hopefully that'll work out for them on the track. But from what I've seen in the car, I'm quite impressed with what they've done and the areas that they've sort of tried to exploit a bit further are areas outside of the modern, the common thinking, I suppose you might call it, which is nice to see as well. So I would expect them to do a little bit better. Probably, hopefully more appearances in Q2. Getting through to Q1 might be a little bit tricky, but more appearances in Q2, and I would think a few points on the board. Nothing dramatic. But again, as we said earlier on in this, a lot depends on that step that Ferrari think they've taken. And because, as I say, Haas and Alfa Romeo get that free of charge. So it'll be interesting to see where they are. Again, you could close the gap up to Mercedes, which is what, as I said earlier, again, Williams need to do. And you could actually end up by position further back. So that's just one of those sort of sets of consequences. Williams can only focus on where Mercedes get to, and trying to close that gap down to them a bit. If they do that, then they've done a good job. If they haven't done that, then they have not done a good job. So where the others are is all about the others.
Well, we'll take that as a relatively positive seal of approval from you. That's always an encouraging thing for a team. Not easy to get Gary's thumbs up with a new car. So thanks very much, Gary and Mark Hughes. Do head to therace.com and don't forget the hyphen loads to read there, including Gary's in-depth appraisal on the car and all the news from the launch press conference. Do check out sister podcasts, Bring Back V10s, and also check out our YouTube channel. Just search for The Race. Thanks for listening. We'll be back probably for the Ferrari launch next week. And then, of course, there'll be regular podcasts during pre-season testing. So join us next week for more on F1's pre-season.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.